Crouch. Bind. Set.
Joe presents The House of Rugby, Season 3.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to House of Rugby. We've got a busy programme ahead of us. Joining me this week is Sean O'Brien, who is ever-present these days, I'm pleased to say. And coming back onto the show, well, as a Six Nations winner, it's Jonathan Davis. Gents, how are we all?
Very good, thanks. Not a bother now, not a bother. Feeling fresh after my fresh haircut now yesterday. I must say, the barber done a spectacular job, so...
Are you going back to get it finished next week?
I'm going back. Yeah, it was so long. He said come back next Friday. So
he needs going a back break, to get.
Did you take
Haven't paid for it yet. Yeah, I did actually. I did take a picture in. First time in my life.
Of who?
I'm not telling you.
Foxy.
Come on.
Did you take a picture of Foxy's hair?
I did actually. That's who it was. I said, make me look like this Six Nations champion.
Oh, I know. Hey.
But the first time ever, you took a photo of somebody into the hairdressers and said, I want to look like this.
I said, can you resemble something like this? And they said, it's kind of up to you. And I said, I don't really want to shave the sides of it anymore. I said, I'd rather a scissors cut all over. And he goes, either or, like, what do you want? He says, I can do like a grade 4. So I went with a grade 4 just around like the locks and ears and stuff. So I was pleased with it, to be honest, because it was out of control. And I was, to be honest, I was wearing a hat around everywhere. And even when the sun was shining, I was still wearing a woolly hat. So I think people thought I was going
stone mad.
So who was
this guy? Who did you ask to be to look like? Come on.
Who was it again? I have it here on my phone. Continue there, Foxy, with your hair, and I'll find a picture.
My hair. My hair's just slowly growing from
You're
when
growing
I
yours
pretty
back
much
in.
Picked it. Yeah. The wife wasn't happy with the buzz cut, so I'm trying to grow it back now.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it was Chris Hemsworth or someone like that.
Chris.
Very similar. He's played a bit
physique
of rugby in his time too,
lot.
By all accounts. Yeah. Touch. He's meant to be an avid tag rugby player, meant to be pretty nimble on his feet and could hand off and stuff. So,
haircuts are a big thing, though. I think Adam Hastings sometimes does the cuts in the Scotland camp. Is there somebody in the Welsh camp that's providing the haircuts for you guys, Foxy?
Yeah, we had a few of the boys were quite dab handed. Toby Falito, Willis Holoholo, and one of the staff members as well. So, pretty much on days off, they'd have a full barber list would go up, and you have to book in your slot. So it was making sure you got in on time to get a decent cut, because you know Shawnee's hair was out of control by the end of it. So we were quite lucky; we had some of the boys who could do it.
Cash is king. Cash is king in camp. Who again?
Yeah, they're charging again.
They're not charging, surely.
Yeah, to charity. So, okay. You know, we always try and raise a bit of money in charity, and we actually did quite well this campaign. So, you know, we gave a fair bit to charity, which was nice to support, like, a few different charities.
But, Sean, you've been building up to this moment. So if one of your teammates had offered to cut your hair, maybe they did, it was a flat no, you were going to someone, like, a decent guy by the looks of things.
Is that a compliment from you, Lee McKenzie?
Yeah, it is a compliment, yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Your hair is looking very sharp, I must say. And did you get it coloured, by the way?
No, I haven't had it coloured. That's the problem.
Right,
I'm going to go lighter for the summer.
It's still looking good.
It's a bit witchy.
I had a couple of people who wanted to chop it, and I was like, no. I was leaving it because it was at that stage of had enough length in it for the barber to work his magic, and thankfully he has. So
you can't polish it to it though.
All systems go.
Well, there's a trend developing. Like Jamie George came back last week within the first 2 minutes, he was really punchy. You're coming back in on the show, Foxy, and then you're getting stuck into Sean as well.
Well, I've had a bit of a respite from him, so I'm just happy to see him. So,
well, he's obviously jealously because he's known for his nice hair, and he shaved it off a couple of months ago, and he's sick now that he's actually done it. So,
he's
looking at me now, going, he's looking well.
There are some pretty bad haircuts though in rugby. It's fair to say. Have you got any teammates that you look at and you think you got to sort this out, boys?
Jesus, we have a fella playing with us called Jack Cook Cookie. He's one of the young guys, the young back rower, and he came in with a mullet, but it was dyed orange. properly orange like a couple of weeks ago. And I said to him, he was passing me in the gym one day, I said, look, get rid of that. I said, he looked like a disgrace going around the place. And then we had our number eight, Albert. He had a nice cut, but his beard was orange as well. So it didn't turn out right. So he went to dye his beard. He's a big Fijian guy.
I bet you didn't tell him to sort it out, though, did you?
Damn right I did. I said, Albert, get that sorted now. And then I ran out of the changing room. But there's a few dodgy ones going around at the minute. But hopefully by the end of this week now, lads will have sorted their lives out again. And it's nearly like women this week probably going into beauticians and getting their hair done and nails done and whatever else done, and lads are just going to get their hair cut, thankfully. We'll just,
whatever else done, we'll just call it a full MOT.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Probably best to leave that there. Foxy, the last time you were on, you were alongside Dan Biggar. You were scratching your heads wondering how you'd managed to lose that match against France. You needed Scotland to deliver against France. Never in doubt, you're Six Nations winners.
Never in doubt whatsoever. it was pretty hairy watching on Friday night at home. But no, it was a good game to watch. I was probably getting more stressed than I would normally would. the Scottish boys did us a huge favour, and you know, we were able to go there and lift the trophy on the Saturday with everyone. And you know, it wasn't as probably we wanted, but it was a nice way to, you know, end the tournament to be crowned champions. You know, it was a lot of hard work went into it, and you know, we'll still probably look back in years to come thinking that we blew a Grand Slam, but, you know, championship isn't too bad. But, it was good. It was just totally different, you know. Like, you play for the moments in the stadium, after games, in front of crowds, and this was in our training centre in the barn, and to a huge ovation, as you can imagine. But, yeah, it was... It was weird, but no, it was good at the same time. It was a good way to end that part of the campaign.
So what happens on the Friday night? You're all watching it at home, and then there's a WhatsApp group or something?
Yeah, the WhatsApp group, nothing was said until the 80 minutes was done, because we weren't tempting any fate there. And then after the result and, you know, everyone congratulated each other, our attention turned to... the state of Wayne Pivac's curtains when he came on screen. I think he had a lot of stick for them. Wayne,
he got a lot of stick for them.
Yeah, he was very quick to point out that the house he is currently renting, they weren't his choice of curtains. So, I think you can hear in the interview his phone going absolutely mental, and I think it's everyone just getting into him. But I think he took it well.
You'll all find out the next selection, won't you, if you took it well enough.
Yeah, I think it could be dropped though.
Just talking about all the haircuts, there's been a selection of coaches picked for the Lions, none of whom need a haircut, in actual fact. Robin McBride, Gregor Townsend, Steve Tandy and Neil Jenkins have all been selected by Warren Gatland to join him on the Lions tour. Just for you all, Steve Tandy works alongside Gregor Townsend in Scotland. He's going to be looking after defence. Gregor's looking after the attack. Robin McBride, the forwards. Neil Jenkins, the kicking coach. Guys, what did you make of those selections? There's been a lot of noise about the coaches ruled out who won't be going. They've ruled themselves out. But that is a formidable group in terms of what they did as players, but also what they're doing as coaches as well.
I think it's a nice looking coaching setup. I think it'll bring a bunch of new ideas into the Lions that, you know, they've had similar coaches now for the last two tours, and you know, it'll freshen things up a little bit and new ideas. I think Scotland's D has been brilliant. I think Steve Tandy as a player was a very, very smart player, played against him a lot for the Ospreys, and Gregor obviously with the attack, he looked to play a lot. And you know, you've Robin McBride then as well, who's in Leinster now but has an awful lot of experience obviously at the highest level. They'll be busy, I think. They'll be busy, the coaches, because, you know, of the schedule. But it's going to be exciting, I think. And Gats will obviously oversee all that and make sure they're all going to one direction. And it should be an interesting out there.
It's an exciting group, I think. As Shawnee said, that, you know, Scotland had a great tournament with two big away wins, and you know, obviously Mukka's, he actually gave me my first cap on the 2009 tour when every other Welsh player was on the Lions. So yeah, it was you know, plenty of experience there as well, and you know, a lot, some of them know what the Lions is all about as a player, you know. So it's it'll be you know, great for them to get into it now and, you know, see what, you know, Gats wants of them and see where they take their, you know, philosophy really.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see who does what as well. So there's so many components now, I think, to coaches. So Steve Tandy's obviously defence, but is he going to do some of the unstructured stuff, for instance, when, you know, the South Africans kick the ball back, or will Jenks look after that aspects of it? Because obviously Jenks is a great man. First of all, he's a brilliant man to have in the touring squad because he's absolutely hilarious. But he's also, his knowledge of the game is, you know, outstanding. So he'll, like, who's going to do what? I think that'll be an interesting part of the coaching team and what their actual roles is. Because, like, you have a defence coach nowadays has to have a bit of, you know, attack in him as well, because defence is about getting the ball back. When we get the ball back, what are we doing straight away? What's our process? What's our systems, for instance? So I think that's going to be an interesting part when we actually see them in action and I suppose hear through the grapevine who's doing what and you know, how they're all, how as I said, like, how Gats brings them all together and gives them specific roles and wants them to do what he wants, I suppose, where they want to get to with their game. So I think that's going to be another interesting one when they get together.
Yeah, but Warren Gatland asked Gregor Townsend 4 years ago to go on that Lions tour, and Gregor had to turn it down because he'd literally just taken over the job for Scotland that Vern Cotter had vacated. How does it all work then? What does Warren do on a tour when he has all these other coaches?
I think he makes sure everything's in place for the team to go out there and win. You know, I think it's, you know, he always says, you know, the buck stops with him, and you know, he'll always make sure that he supports the players and gives them the best chance to prepare as well as they can. So he'll just, you know, structure it all, make sure the training plan works well and is best suited really for the how they want to play and what, you know, their working week is, because on a tour it's getting in the quality training when you're traveling a lot as well. That's the difficult part, and getting a balance of that is difficult. But what Gats has done at, you know, the three previous tours he's been involved in is found that balance, I think.
And Sean, how does it work in terms of people deferring to each other? I mean, if Gregor or any of the others have a strong plan and they want to go to Warren with it, is he the kind of guy who will listen to that?
Oh yeah,
I mean, is it a committee?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Gats will obviously take on board, you know, what the strengths of the other coaches are, and I'm sure he'll ask their opinions on different aspects of where he wants to go with the whole thing. So, yeah, he's very open. Like Gats, when he's at training and stuff, he kind of potters around between backs and forwards and chips in here and there with like valid points and bits and pieces like that, and. I think he'll you know, set his stall out pretty early with the coaches in terms of what he wants from them. But I'm sure they'll have discussions before it gets to that stage of what type of game they want to play, you know, what type of kicking game they want to play, all those bits and pieces, you know, set piece stuff. So, you know, their conversations he'll have before they get over there. They won't be had just when they arrive, you know, in South Africa. It's too late at that point. And you know, going back to Foxy's point about structuring the training, I know there was a bit of, I'm not going to say, yeah, it was probably a bit harsh by me, you know, after the last tour, but I said, you know, that the players grabbed a hold of it and we probably messed up the first week and the last week a little bit in terms of the structure of the training. But yeah, I wasn't trying to have a cut off individuals, or I was just trying to make the setup a little bit better, but it came across as I was cutting up individuals. And you know, when I spoke to the boys after that, they understood where I was coming from, and it didn't come across right for me. But you know, a lesson learned. I was at home in my home rugby club, very comfortable, and just blurted a few bits and pieces out. But I think they'll have, you know, Foxy says about, I suppose there was a lot of Welsh involved in the last tour and 2013. So the structure of their week would have been different to Ireland or England or Scotland. So I think they'll understand now what players they bring and what way their weeks are set out, in terms of, because you always have like a physio or an S&C or something that looks at all the different programs and knows what suits different individuals. So like, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they structure the weeks and what kind of plan they come up with for training leading into these test games, especially.
So do you think some players turn up that maybe, that wouldn't know, for example, the Welsh way, Foxy, and are in some ways, well, I don't know if surprised is too basic a word, but are just a little, you know, we don't normally train like this?
Yeah, I don't think surprised is, it's just what you come accustomed to. I think there's so much experience on these tours, and everyone, and we are creatures of habit. You know, we have a way that we like to do things, and when we're taken outside of that, you know, we're uncomfortable. And I think, you know, how, you know, we'd have boys come up to me and say, oh, do you think, you know, we should be doing double days? And I was like, well, I've done this for nearly 8 years at the time, I think, and I'm used to it. I can do it fine. And it's whatever that needed for that squad is the best way that moving forward. And I think there's a responsibility as well on these tours, when we talk about like structure of the week, that players do have input. You know, Gatt will always go to his players and ask that, you know, how we feel that, you know, things should be done and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it is a balancing act, and it's bringing, you know, four countries together to play in a test series in less than 6 weeks. You know, it's a tough, tough task. And I think, you know, these are why these coaches have been selected to do it, because, you know, they've done well in over the last few years.
It's obviously, you know, the most elite, a lot of people would say, that you get, because as Foxy says, you've got four nations, they're coming together to take on one country. And, you know, you think back of all these different Lions matches, and they tend to be the ones where people say, you know, that was one of my favourite rugby matches of all time. In terms of, for example, you as a player, you're obviously there because you're at a certain level and you've deserved your place to get there. But do you always learn something from working with other nationalities of players, working with other nationalities of coaches, whether it be how you want to do things, how you should be doing things, or maybe, you know, seeing how other people not get it wrong, but could be doing better as well?
Yeah, I think you do. I think you get a good flavour of the way teams operate, people operate. You know, Foxy mentions like double days, for instance. In Ireland, we wouldn't do double days on the field. You know, we do a gym session and a pitch session, but in Wales they do double, like to get togged out twice, etc. And there's bits and pieces like that. You get that dog.
Two dog owners.
Get that dog off my seat.
It's my dog. Sorry.
That's okay.
But I think you get. I think you definitely get a flavour of what other teams try and do as well, and individuals try and do, and who's driving different things. So you get that, but you embrace that as well. Like, you embrace an Owen Farrell or a Johnny Sexton, you know, giving you a boot in the hole and telling you, come on, this is what I want from you. Or a death stare from Paul O'Connell when you don't get a line out right. Or an Alan Wynne Jones would be very similar, like. Know your detail, know what's going on around you, because when them boys hit the field, it's full bore. There's no time to be making mistakes and stuff. So you get to know people pretty quickly on the tour as well, because the start of it obviously is absolute carnage. You're on the beer together for a couple of days, and no better way than to have the crack with each other, and then you're straight into training, and you better
see,
and
a lot.
The Lions,
that really interests me, because I would expect, for example, like, you know, Johnny could quickly drill into you, Sean, and Alan Wynn could probably quickly drill into you, Foxy. But they will just instantly keep that position and go cross-nation. They don't mind if they've never played alongside you before. These are the kind of guys that will absolutely stay true to themselves and kind of get stuck into you for the good of the team.
Yeah, because I think we're competitors at the end of the day, and we're there to work. And, you know, if Johnny knows his job and what he needs to do, and someone in his team doesn't know his job and not executing his role, he'll get into anyone. I think Richard Hibbard had it in 2013, I think, Shawnee, do you remember?
I think
Hibbs wasn't quite used to getting a rocket like that, but it happens, and that's why they're great competitors, and they're the top of their game, you know, because they expect these standards, and that's what happens. You know, the training goes up another level, and you have to be ready to go out there and execute your job at the end of the day.
And does everyone subscribe to that, Sean? Everyone's there under the sort of thing that, all right, okay, these guys are going to tell me what to do, and I just have to do it, regardless if I've just met them 2 days before.
I think the respect, you see, that they have from everyone else is a massive thing, and they've been there, done it, as Foxy says. But you have leaders of the other nations, you know, telling you to do something, and they know what we're trying to play, they know the game plan we have, they know all the calls, they don't get too many things wrong. So, you know what I mean? You know where you are in the pecking order, and, you know, if one of them gives you a bit of a bollock, and you just soak it up and say, you know what, I got it wrong, I'll move on and I'll get it right the next time. There's no point in, if it was probably Johnny, I'd get into verbals with him just because I know him so well, but if it was someone else, I wouldn't, and I'd just probably do that to wind him up a little bit and get him fired up, and
which is probably why he would get stuck into you in the first place.
Probably ruin training on everyone else. He'd be in bad form for the rest of the session, but that'd be only me winding him up. But no, it's just the way it is. I think, you know, you've an Alan Wynn, and you've a Faz and a Johnny, and these boys, you row in behind them, and they demand a certain standard. And that's what I was going to say earlier. I think the Lions brings you to another level as well. The Lions, when you're there in camp, you feel this, unbelievable feeling that you want to do the jersey proud. You want to be the best version of you when you're on the field, and you want to be the best version of you when you're off the field. So it brings out the best in you, I think. And, you know, you need leaders within that, and those boys are the leaders. So you're going to listen to get better, and you're going to listen to be in a position to win those big test games. And then you have the quiet man like Foxy, who just saunters around training, doesn't say much at all, makes a few little half breaks, throws the ball on the left peg and into the corner, and goes about his business, and then comes alive on test games. So he doesn't do much during training sessions, but he does during games, thankfully.
The thing is, though, you got Johnny at 10, Faz at 12, and they go, right, what do you want to do? I said, boys, you're steering this ship. I'll just go along the ride. I'll just do what you need me to do. It's as simple as that for me in 2017.
Yeah.
We hear always about the social aspect of the Lions, and how the players bond and they all go out and, you know, you all become friends afterwards, etc. Does that apply to the coaches as well, or do they keep themselves very much to themselves? It makes it sound like such a naive question.
I think the coaches are worse than the players. I think they go every night.
Do they go out with the players?
They do when it's a proper night out, but they'd only be there for a couple of hours, and then they'd disappear somewhere else on their own. Isn't that the way it usually works, Foxy? You might have one or two stragglers that'll hang on with the younger boys for the bit of crack, but they enjoy themselves, obviously, and that's what it's about too for them, getting to know each other and having the crack and different conversations and enjoying each other's company. But I think they probably have a glass of red every night, maybe. And while we're working, most days they're polishing off a few with dinner in the evening.
Oh yeah, you definitely know when you come down in the morning when the staff have had a few drinks, the eyes are a bit glassed over, and you're getting strapping from the physio and you can smell the red wine. But no, I think it's all about timing. I think, when boys have a good win or there's beers in the change rooms afterwards, they'll always be mixing with players and staff. And it's, I think it's important, like Shawnee says, it's the best way of getting to know people is having a few beers, and you got to enjoy each other's company because you're, away from home, and you just got to, it's a buy-in, really, and
embrace it.
Boys love it.
Embrace it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm delighted to say that somebody who is a real inspiration joins us on the show. Zainab Alima is a frontline worker for the NHS. She's a mother of three. She's also a rugby player. She also happens to be black and Muslim. Zainab, you have got a lot going on. No wonder you won the Sunday Times Grassroots Sportswoman of the Year Award. There's a lot in your life, isn't there?
100%. It's literally non-stop. If it's not the kids, it's the husband. If it's not the husband, it's work. If it's not work, it's rugby. So it's pretty phenomenal.
Now, let's just talk about your rugby, because I know you're so, so passionate about it. It shines through when you talk. It shines through on your social media. But how does your culture, the fact that you're a Muslim, impact on you as a rugby player?
On a personal level, not much, but I did face a few struggles, especially when I joined my rugby team in university. That was a culture shock, if I'm honest. I think up until... So I started playing rugby at the age of 14. That's when I first literally got my hands on a rugby ball and I fell in love. But when I was 17, I did A-level and PE, and then I sort of went to my first rugby club in Ealing at 17 years old. I think at 18, up until that point, I was sort of just in love with the game. I didn't really notice much. But when I went to university, it was sort of a culture shock in the sense that young, black, Muslim girl going to university. University is usually a place where people turn a bit rebellious. And for me, joining my rugby team, I was the only black person on my team. I was the only Muslim person on my team. I was the only one that didn't drink on my team. So there was a lot going on, and I really felt out of place. I felt like I didn't fit in. I wasn't sure rugby was for me in those early stages, if I'm being honest.
And rugby is a sport that prides itself on inclusivity. It says it prides itself on inclusivity. Is that what you found?
Yes, I think still, especially for example, rugby clubs, when you're putting out... you're trying to get people recruitment, right? It says on the tin, all abilities welcome, everybody welcome, inclusive. But I think when you get down to nitty-gritty of the real situations, I do believe we can do more to make it more accessible to people of ethnic minorities, if I'm honest. I truly believe if it wasn't for my PE teacher saying, let's do a rugby session. She went out on the whim. It was not part of the school curriculum. She said, let's do rugby today. And that's when I found rugby. And I genuinely believe, me as a black Muslim woman, I wouldn't have found rugby if it wasn't for that PE teacher. And it just blows my mind that I just wish the game was easily accessible to everyone. I mean, it's a beautiful game. Like, it's just sad to know that there's certain people that won't get the access to sport. And when I talk about certain people, I'm thinking about people from ethnic minorities, people that live in council estates, for example, that probably never seen a rugby ball before. Football is big, basketball is big, but rugby in these areas, I'm not quite sure we're doing enough.
Yeah, a lot of the guys talk about that as well, don't they? I mean, Benno Urbano, Sean and Foxy did a great documentary about this. And if you're not spreading the word of rugby into all these areas, then essentially, Sean, and you sort of touched upon this before, when we spoke about this, it's going to lose out on players, and it could great players, and rugby needs to try and be there for everyone and encourage everyone.
Yeah, I think it's one of these things that, there's a lot said about it, but what's really been done about it? I see some of these big major corporate sponsors saying stuff like All In, and let's say the one that's at home, and whatever it may be over here. But they have all these slogans and words, and it's just for sponsorship purposes. I don't actually think they really mean it. And I think that's the problem. So if you're going to talk about something, put resources out there and make sure it's actually being done. Not just have it as lip service. And I think that's what's missing here. And I think, you know, when you pull the skin back a little bit, you know, from these big corporations and the unions, they need to really look at what they're saying to people and make sure they're delivering on it. Not just saying these words and kind of having people saying, oh, well, they're trying this and they're trying that. Actually delivering what they're actually saying. And it's truthful. So I think they have a lot to answer for, you know, in spreading the word and getting it out there and making sure that there's as much as possible being done to broaden that net and grab everyone in and, you know, let them enjoy rugby for what it is.
Zainab, do you feel pressure on you as a woman, as a black woman, as a Muslim woman, to go out there and try and encourage other young girls? And actually, from the Muslim side, also young boys as well to get involved, because they will naturally look up to you.
Yeah, I don't feel pressured at all. I'm just playing rugby because I love it. And being on this journey that I am on and being a role model, I guess people look at me as a role model and say I'm inspiring. I'm just doing me. I'm literally just doing me, and I'm happy for anyone to sort of come in and live this journey with me. So I don't feel pressured, but it's definitely one of my passions to see an impact, and to actually, just like what Sean was saying, like see. Not it be empty words. I want to see literally people being active in trying to make rugby more inclusive, especially to those of ethnic minorities.
Foxy, what is your take on it? I mean, what's it like in Wales? How diverse is things?
I think, you know, it can be better. I think it should be better. I think, you know, we're very fortunate professionals, the standards that we expect, and I think there should be a minimum standard delivered to everyone who wants to be involved in rugby. And I think that goes down to equipment, facilities, you know, all this. And, you know, like Zainab's PE teacher gave you the opportunity to play. There are people out there that want to show what rugby can do to people, and it's a great sport on and off the field to be a part of, and it core values put people in good stead moving through their lives. And I think having the backing for these great people, the volunteers, is the most important thing, that they can go out there and implement their want to expose people to rugby.
Zainab, I was reading some articles about you, and there was one thing that stood out, that you mentioned that people, when they see the hijab and the leggings and everything, it's like a second glance. They're like, what is going on here? Tell us about that.
I think it's just a natural reaction, because I do look different. As soon as I step on the pitch, like, I look different. So it is a natural reaction. But I think before, I used to sort of be a bit self-conscious and go, oh my God, people are looking at me. But it gave me the confidence to play, like, really well, because I know if I knock that ball on, if I miss that tackle, everybody's gonna, you know, I'm gonna stick out even more. And so it really helped me to play the best every time I step on the pitch. But I embrace it. I mean, I'm different. Like, you know, I embrace that my culture is different. I may have a different way of life than my teammates, but that's what rugby's about, isn't it? People from different walks of life, different backgrounds coming together to play the sport that we all love. So I think it's really important for me to own my identity and own who I am within the rugby space. And I think also it's really important, by me being who I am, hopefully we'll inspire other people, regardless of their background, to also feel like they can be who they are. And going back to Maggie, I always talk about Maggie Afonso, like every interview I do, I mention her. And she was definitely one of my inspirations at the time, where I thought that rugby's not for me, I think I might leave, you know. But seeing her absolutely smashing it at international level, playing for the Red Roses, you know, another black woman playing at elite level, made me think, actually, I can play rugby. Like, if Maggie can play, she's black like me, why can't I play, you know? But on grassroots level, I literally did not see. I would look left, look right, I didn't see anyone that looked like me. So I really felt, oh, I'm not sure. And then another thing that helped me stay in the sport was actually looking through the laws of rugby. And it said there in black and white under the clothing section that you can wear a headscarf to play. And for me, it was such a relief because up until that time, I didn't feel like I belonged just because I didn't see anyone that looked like me. But actually looking at the laws of rugby, it was like rugby opening its arms to me, like, you can play, because it's recognising that as a Muslim woman, I'm covering my hair and I can actually practice my faith and play rugby. So it was a game changer for me, honestly. And yeah, it really helped boost my confidence.
Tell us about your nickname, Bulldozer.
Yes, the Bulldozer. So it sounds really exciting, but it really is. But I'll tell you the story. So when I was playing at my previous club down in East London, I sort of switched from outside centre to number eight. So I was playing back row when Bulldozer was the move, number eight pick up from the base of scrum and just running straight to number 10. So that was just the move. And because I was number eight, I was the Bulldozer, just because the name of the court was the Bulldozer. But it sounds so exciting, like, you know, rugby player, Bulldozer, but the actual reason how it came about was not exciting. But I do love the nickname because I feel like it really emulates who I am, what I'm trying to do. Bulldozer, construction equipment, right? It smashes things, demolishes things. Who am I? I'm a black Muslim woman. Pretty much as ethnic minority as you can get, trying to smash stereotypes, trying to break down barriers like a bulldozer would, and, you know, carry out my passion for rugby. So I feel like that name suits me. I know it sounds a bit cocky, but I don't look at it that way. I just sort of, I feel like the bulldozer itself emulates exactly what I'm about and what I'm trying to do. So I think it's the perfect fit, to be fair.
Sounds good.
Even
considering you're number eight now as well. Obviously, I'm your favourite out of me and Foxy. you're surely not picking it back over a forward.
Well, to be fair, I think I'm going to try prop actually in the coming season. I'm going to give it a go front row and see how I go. I think the way I play, my strengths probably lie in. As a prop, so, but I'll give it a go. But I love that number eight, the spicy positions.
You sound like you've still got plenty of rugby in you if you're starting to move positions at this stage. What is your ultimate ambition, Zainab?
I want to be the first black Muslim woman to play for England, and I actually only decided that during lockdown.
Fair play. I think that's a brilliant thing to have. Just something that you can lock horns on and go for it.
Exactly. So I'll tell you how this sort of came about. So I wanted to put out a message out there that someone, black Muslim women, can actually play at international level. I wanted to put that message out there that there hasn't been anyone like that yet. And this could actually happen. It could potentially happen one day. But in that moment, it was nothing to do with me. It was just me trying to put a message out there. I got Celia Kwanzaa, who plays for Wasps and GB Sevens. She's an artist and she did that illustration for me. And when I saw it, we spoke about the minute details. I wanted to have a headscarf, I wanted to have long sleeves. I literally told her everything I wanted. The moment I saw it, it just brought me to tears. So this is perfect. This is exactly what I want. And as soon as you see it, you just know what it's about, right? It's powerful, it's straight to the point, it's direct. And a lot of people, when I put that out, said to me, but see, why don't you try it? Why don't you play for England? Why not you? And I'm like, what am I going to do? I've got three kids. You know, I'm a nurse. My back is always hurting. I'm always doing long shifts. Like, why? How can I play for England? And that was my initial reaction when people asked me. And obviously, lockdown happening, I was working as a nurse. We went through quite some tough times at work. I work as a neonatal nurse in intensive care. And so I'm working with premature babies and babies that are sick, newborn babies. And there came to a time when the pandemic was really tough. I was looking after babies that their mothers were fighting for their lives on the ventilators because they had COVID, babies that were born early because the mum couldn't cope with the pregnancy anymore because she had COVID. So it was really tough. And we all sit back and think, life's too short, you know. If life's too short, you don't know what's around the corner. You might as well just go for it. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to go for it. I'm going to try as hard as I can to try and play the best rugby I can and see if I can get in an England shirt one day. And I was so scared to put that out on social media. I actually announced it on social media, but I was so scared because I thought, what are people going to think? Like, are people going to believe me? Are people going to think, you know, fancy her chances. She won't make it. But I thought, do you know what? Stop what they think. I might as well just go for it, right? And the outpour of support that I had was just mind-blowing. People were just messaging me, you can do it, go for it. Actually, this dream is bigger than me. It's not even just about me. Everything that we've talked about so far about my passion for rugby and trying to get more ethnic minorities in and, you know, being a mum, being a nurse, all those things that accompany me and my identity, I truly believe getting that England shirt and attaining that goal to play for England will kill two birds, one stone. Like, because I truly, in my heart of hearts, believe if I get in that England shirt, I'm going to open up a new, you know, rugby to a new audience. People that I'm trying to reach out to play rugby will then be thinking, oh, look at Z, like, she's a black woman and she's wearing a hijab, she's playing rugby. Maybe I can give it a go. Mothers out there, people that have kids. I've got three young kids. They're all under five, right? Mothers that, you know, I know as a mother, sometimes it's hard to even go out to just, it's hard to go to the toilet, actually, on your own sometimes. And in the hopes that when I get that England shirt, people are looking to me as a mother free. Mother's thinking, actually, I am a mother, but I can go out. I can go for a 5K jog. I can, you know, do a sport. I can be active. And then for the career woman as well that has a job and, you know, career is tough. I'm a career woman as NHS. I would like to hope that I'm going to inspire a fellow career woman to follow her dreams as well. And it doesn't have to be a massive dream. It can be as little as I'm going to go out for a walk today. You know, just because they're seeing me working hard at my goal, hopefully they'll look at themselves and think that if Z's, you know, she's really going for a goal, maybe I should go for mine. So
you're what's it called? I'm playing 15 years and you're making me want to go back and start playing again. I thought it was going the other way. I think you're an absolute inspiration. I think it's brilliant what you're doing. And I think by the sounds of you, you're going to do it. That's the exciting part, I think, for all of us listeners and followers now.
And the thing is as well, that you say that if you get to England, you're going to inspire people. You're doing that already. And the fact that it's on your wall, you can see it, you can be it, you're doing the hard work already. So congratulations to you. And thank you so much for joining us, Zainab. Your enthusiasm and work ethic is infectious. You put us all to shame. We're going to go and work on ourselves now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
No, good luck with everything.
Thank you. And very best of luck. Very best
thank
of luck.
You.
Thank you. Take care.
So guys, I want to talk about the Welsh regions and where they are within, well, European rugby, whether it be Champions Cup, Challenge Cup. Foxy, it seems that when the international side does its best, that has a knock-on effect with the regional sides. Would you agree with that?
The record does show that, yes. But it's a hard one to put your finger on, I think. You know, there's a group of internationals that are away for a large period, and you know the depth and size of the squads are tested during that period. And then when the internationals come back, you know the reintegration we've always struggled, and you know these last European games, you know, we were absolutely battered by Sale. You know, they beat us in all facets of the game, and you know it was very embarrassing for us as a club. But I think, you know, we had positive debriefs afterwards. We were very honest. We knew the areas we need to improve on and develop. But I think, you know, the Welsh regions have always had a day where they can compete. But it's getting that consistency where, you know, the gold standard is Leinster, and it's making sure that you can compete week in, week out with these clubs. And whether that's, you know, more funding to get better quality and depth in the squad, I don't know. But it's, you know, that's what everyone's striving to be. And I, you know, we're not getting it right at the moment, but, you know, it's not, it's, you know, we're definitely giving it a go, but, you know, the results aren't good enough, I have to say.
I want to talk about Leinster in just a moment, Sean, but, you know, you see that as well with Scotland only having two sides, two professional sides, that when it comes to that international window, you know, those sides just hemorrhage the top players. And it's not an easy task for the guys who are left to then try and step up. But you mentioned integration and you know, trying to integrate these players back into a side. You know, that Sale match, the Scarlets had over 600 international caps on the field in that match. So, I mean, is that the difficulty, that when you strip these players away and put them back in again, that takes time to readjust?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, we did, you know, boys had a bit of time off after the Six Nations on that first week, and then we had over a week, I think 10 days to prepare for the Sale. So, you know, we had time, and, you know, we're not saying that we weren't ready for it. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I watching
just
the game,
goes like
I
that just, sometimes. It just happens. Like,
yeah.
You do a battering every so often, and, you know, we had that. And I don't know. It's, it was, I'm still scratching my head, as you can see. Yeah. But it's about now making sure that, you know, we learn from this and we build, because we've got, you know, like you said, we've got a lot of experience, a lot of international players, and you know, we need to play a better standard week in, week out. And how we get that, I think, you know, we had a, like I said, honest debrief afterwards, and a lot of honest things were said to each other, and we need to make sure that we take that and we look at how we felt after the Sale, and we don't want that to happen again. And, you know, looking at, like, we're going to talk about Leinster and how they do it, you know, that's where you want to get, because they miss a ton of boys during the Six Nations. Yeah. But when they come back in, it's like they haven't been away. And, you know, it's you know, extremely impressive how they do it.
And the strength and depth, Sean, you know, give us an insight into what it's like at Leinster, because, you know, Foxy talked about the integration of players, but the players who are left when the biggest names are stripped away are still pretty handy players.
Yeah, I think they are, and I think that's been the key to Leinster's success over the past number of years, when the big boys are away as such. They use 56 players again in the Pro 14 this season. A lot of young academy lads and bits and pieces like that, but they've integrated a few, you know, people who wouldn't have been on the radar last year that are probably playing a lot of Pro 14 this year. And then when it comes back to, you know, finals rugby, I think because the boys do so well in that period, the lads who are there battling it out every week while the lads are away, there's an expectation on the boys coming back to raise their game again, raise the level. And that's what's expected in Leinster. When you come back in, it's not like, oh, you're back in now. You add value to the setup. Even though you're actually coming from international and you might have had a good international campaign, come back and add value to the setup, because the boys who have been there for probably 8-9 weeks have added serious amount of value and probably have put you in a position to be in a semi-final or quarter-final or final in the Pro 14. And the standard they have at the minute of players, and I was looking kind of at their third, fourth choice options recently. And if they put another team in the Pro 14, I think they'd be top four. I genuinely do. I think they'd be top four. I think they'd make the playoffs, which is scary. But that's just the standard that they've all driven within the environment, and the coaches have driven, and the standard of training is absolutely phenomenal. That's one of the things, I think, if anyone went to Foxy, if you went to Leinster for a week to train, I think you'd just be shocked at the intensity of training.
And you know that you said 56 players used in the Pro 14. How many of them would be in training, like, on a normal week now, say, right, everyone's back from international, do you have those 56 players on the training field, or is it the squad, like, cut into two and then they're training separately?
No, yeah, they're all integrated at different times. Now, I'm talking like first, second year academy players who would be, you know, in on the training, in on those big blocks when the internationals are away. They're there all the time training. There might be 10 maybe left out of that, But when the boys come back, there's still that amount of players on the field at the one time. And that's why I'm talking about the training intensity, because they do so much kind of unstructured stuff. There's people waiting on the sideline. There's whatever, 10 lads each side. And then there's 15v15 on the field, for instance. And it's just like clockwork. But bang, bang, you've 5 minute work here. Next minute, the lads are in, there's 10 lads off. So like, it's like a continuous vicious circle. When you get to Tuesday or Wednesday in Leinster, and the training is tough, like, and you know, you see in other squads, you could have five or six lads standing on the sideline for a block, and they go in. They don't like ramp it up to another level, where the Leinster environment expects that of you and has it there. And I think that's been the big difference. They're just churning out these quality players because these younger guys are seeing the older guys do it week in, week out. They've so much experience. They have a great setup. They have a great academy. They have great coaches. So they're being well drilled day in, day out. And they're a very hard machine to stop. And looking at them at the weekend against Exeter, because I was like, I was saying, this will be a very tough game. And going 14 points down, I remember sitting at the TV going, they'll never lose, they won't lose this game. Because I knew during the week what to try and bring, and that's intensity. And they've done it from probably when they're 14-0 down right the way through the 81st minute. And just quite, it's very hard for teams to live with it. And don't forget those boys as well. Of, you look at the Josh van der Fleer in and out of the Six Nations squad. In the last 2 months, I think he's got 3 man of the matches. And he was outstanding. But like someone like him, for instance, you kind of get dropped, you come back in for the last game against England. He was outstanding in that game as well. Like, the standard he set for himself, for instance, you know, someone coming off that's dropped out of a Six Nations squad usually be a bit down after it. He's went back to his club and it's got him better. Leinster's got him better in the last few months, which is frightening. So he's come out of international camp and gotten better as a player. And that's a testament to the coaches that are there and to the environment, I think.
Sean, would you still fancy Leinster at this stage, albeit we have the semi-finals to go?
Yeah, I would. And the reason I would is just their intensity. I looked at some of the French games at the weekend, and I know the French are a bit different. I'll say again, they're not right in the head. But I think it was just the fact when two French teams come against each other, it's like a battle royale, like, right, we'll try and beat each other up here. And I don't think they play as much as they would against someone else. But I just see Leinster's intensity for 80 minutes is going to move those big French packs around. And their defence is so solid as well. It's not like I know the Exeter game at the start of the Exeter game was a little bit shaky, but in general it's brilliant. So they won't get, La Rochelle won't get opportunities to like KBA and offloads and all this stuff. They'll have their homework done, and I hope they don't underestimate the fact, because it could be the undoing of them as well. It could be La Rochelle's undoing of trying to play that game against Leinster. Because they'll be on like a bouncing ball, or they'll be on scraps before you will. And then when they have the ball, they're away, like. So I still fancy him now. I thought Exeter were going to be the tricky one for them, to be fair. So but again, I'll go to the French boys again. The confidence, when these boys play with confidence, like they did in the Six Nations at times, etc., they're so, so dangerous. So you never really know what you're getting still with the French, unfortunately.
Do you think Ronan O'Gara being a La Rochelle will help prepare them for Leinster?
I think Ronan and John O'Gibbs, because John O was in Leinster for a while as well. I think they'll have the team obviously really, really well prepared. I just don't know if they're at that stage where they can beat the team with the experience like Leinster just yet.
Yeah, it'll be a great game.
Okay, we'll talk about this more in a couple of weeks' time, but it's going to be a cracking match. And as you know, to finish where we started, Foxy, I think that everybody looks in with sort of starry eyes at the way that Leinster do things, and what's next really for the Scarlets in terms of the next few weeks to sort of rebuild from that.
I think, you know, we've obviously with this Rainbow Cup, whether it goes ahead or not, we don't know, but we have three derbies scheduled, and you know, it's opportunity for boys to go out there and play, and you know, to right those wrongs. Really, I think we said about creating an environment that we want to test each other, and then not get complacent in this period where the uncertainty of fixtures or whatever doesn't creep into our training. Have that personal pride of how you know, as an individual, you want to be perceived whether you can turn up to work every day and give the best showing you can, or, you know, whether you just, you don't show up and you can't be asked. You know, people will, you know, in my eyes, that's the worst thing, is your peers not respecting you, that you turn up to work. And I think we've asked the group to do that. And, you know, so far so good. And it's, look forward to these derbies coming up. So we'll see.
So guys, we're just about out of time. What does the weekend hold for you both, Foxy?
Well, with the weekend off, I'm taking full advantage and I'm going off glamping in North Wales and taking in the sights. Yeah, glamping. Yeah, so should
what is
be
that, a tent?
You're really some, treating some pods. You're really treating the a wife. Pod. You're really treating the wife to luxurious weekend away, aren't you?
Yeah, I think I'll be able to make bacon sarnies on the hob we got. I'll be all right. And yes, no, I'll be up in North Wales exploring, so something a bit different, enjoying nice. The, you know.
Nice weekend sounds off. Good. Sean, what about you?
We have Northampton on Friday night in the Prem, so all systems go for that. And then Saturday.
Would you be off to a pub? The pubs are open.
I might actually go to a pub on Saturday, maybe for a bit of lunch or a roast or something, and have a pint. I haven't sat in a beer garden or a pub in a long, long time. Say that again, Foxy.
Is that code? Lunch and roast.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll leave it there.
Leave it there.
Sean, you have never said more sensible words. We are going to leave it there. Gents, thanks so much for your company. Thank you very much, as always, for watching, for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The House of Rugby, Season 3, on Joe.